You're listening to The New Paris. I'm your host, Lindsay Tremuda. Running a business in Paris is a dream for some, a hardship for others. But for today's guest, Jane Birch, it has been a variety of things, including life-changing. 15 years ago, she co-founded La Cuisine Paris, a French cooking school that is still going strong. She talks about the journey to Paris and running this school in her book, The French Ingredient, Making a Life in Paris One Lesson at a Time. And that hit shelves April 9th. Our conversation today covers the Jane from Chicago to the Jane of Paris, starting and running a business, lessons from locals, and writing a memoir. Jane, welcome to the show.
Hello.
You were on the show years ago. I don't know if you remember. You were joined by our friend Arash.
And, yes, I do.
And when Alice Cavanaugh was co-hosting with me and we talked about the representation of Paris and whether it was harmful to show a fantasy version of the city. And you had some very strong opinions.
I did.
But today we're talking about a real version of Paris, which is your Paris. As a business owner, I can't believe we're only talking about La Cuisine Paris now. It's been 15 years this year.
Yes, it has.
Which is shocking because that means you and I have known each other for 15 years.
Yes.
But I'm also holding your story in my hands because you have a book coming out on April 9th.
Isn't that so strange?
It is wild. And it's called The French Ingredient, Making a Life in Paris, One Lesson at a Time. And I have to say, because I told you I would tell you what I thought of it.
Breaking news.
Breaking news live. So impressed.
Oh.
The whole time I was like, my God, how did she do this? Mostly because I can't fathom telling so many, you know, personal stories, recounting, you know, 15 years of history. I've done books that take a lot of research, and I think a lot of that is a way to tell other people's stories instead of my own. So I am so impressed, and I laughed out loud so many times.
I love that. Thank you.
And I think that listeners who know you will read it and hear you, and you really shine through. And those who don't, I hope, you know, still laugh because there are moments that are genuinely funny. At one point you talk about, you know, please don't interrupt unless I'm dry heaving on the floor. I mean, I cackled when I read that.
Because you know that happened.
Yes. When, you know, the one time you want the French staff to leave you alone and here they are interrupting a, you know, hard conversation you needed to have with someone.
Right.
So anyway, I am so proud of you. And this is such a great story. And it's crazy to go through 15 years of your business history, right? But
yeah.
Not only that, as I told you before we started recording, I learned so much about you. Can you give people just a brief background? You grew up in Chicago. How did you go from Chicago to banking to cooking school?
Okay. So, oh my goodness, let me give that brief history really quick. Yeah, my family's pretty much from Chicago. And I started my career, I wanted to work for a financial institution because I just thought finance, working in finance was like you have arrived. For some reason, that was my reference point of achievement. So I got there, I spent the first part of my career in kind of a management associate program where you rotate around to different areas. It was in project, a lot of human resources, kind of back office of it. And I really started to fantasize about becoming a banker because you're working in finance and that's what banking is, right?
Trading and
having relationships and working with money, working in the front office, which people in that industry will call it, where you've got client interaction that's not internal clients. And I had the miracle of somebody that gave me a bit of courage that I could do that and brought that idea to me. So I think, wow, what a leader. That's what a leader does. He reaches back and encourages people to do something.
You talk about that in the book. You talk about these individuals who sort of got you on that path.
Absolutely.
To where you were going to be. So, but you didn't stay in Chicago.
I did not. Actually, I left Chicago straight out of school. And I spent my first year in Tampa, Florida.
Oh, right. I love that part.
I was so excited to graduate, major financial institution, thinking I'm going to New York, Big Apple, ready to go, and I end up in Tampa, Florida.
What was that like, Jane?
You know, I'm a rolling stone. I see that with myself. I try to get my little community and then I'm happy. But that was not really what I had intended my life to be. But that's fine. And then within 9 months, I got an opportunity in London.
Right. And that's where your sort of European adventure.
That's where it started.
Well, when the UK was part of Europe.
Yes.
R.I.P.
Yes.
But then, you know, and I don't want to give everything away because obviously you tell the story so wonderfully with all the characters you meet along the way and, you know, how this idea got in your head that you could do something in Paris. At some point, you get sent to Paris, though.
I'm sent to Paris, working in Paris.
Right.
And I had a wonderfully tough manager.
Who you call Jean-Paul, right?
Yes.
Is that actually his name?
No, it is not.
Okay.
No, it is not.
Okay.
And I hope people read a bit about French culture in his character. He was unrelenting and he taught me so many things. And I love him. And it's thanks to him that I am in Paris. And it's thanks to him that La Cuisine exists, because I never would have been here.
Right. So he took a chance on you, right?
He took a chance on me. Yes, he did.
And what do you think you learned the most from him?
Oh, goodness. He's so much a part of my future story. What I learned most about him, I think, is being a bit of a maverick.
Mm.
Being a bit of a maverick. And it's okay to do things differently. I describe him as somebody who was not your typical banker, but incredibly well-respected and loved in the industry. And he did things his way. And in a way that was always very respectful, but very demanding of high quality. And that stuck with me.
So it was a good experience, despite being hard. Obviously, you had just moved to Paris. You had to make friends. You
Yes.
had to get situated. You talk about some of those, you know, very comical early experiences of finding your bearings and
Exactly.
linguistically also. But he was fair.
He was very fair. He was very tough, very fair.
I think in today's world, you know, there are people, young people in the workforce who confuse the two.
Yes, they do.
I mean, not to be the old person, you know, looking at the youth and criticizing their, you know, their vision or their approach to work. But I do think there is something to be said for having someone who's going to shape you.
Absolutely. And someone that takes time. You know, I always think that he had some really tough conversations with me about my gaffes. You know, wow, thank goodness he did. The worst thing you can do to somebody is just let them continue to fall on their face and sit back and laugh.
Are these gaffes that were related to sort of you being young or being young in Paris and in the French workforce?
I think being in the French workforce and all around culture
mm.
and how things get done and how you present and how you operate with people. Very different from where I came from.
So at what point do you say, I need something else. I'm interested in something else. Why not a cooking school? I mean, I think what's really funny is that, you know, people have this dream
yeah.
of being in food. You talk about Julia Child as having been, you know, obviously a very omnipresent influence for a lot of Americans,
yeah.
especially, you know, when we were growing up, she was there, she was on television, you know, but you never said to yourself, I fancy myself a cook. That wasn't what you were after.
Never. Never. And if you asked me 16 years ago or 17 years ago, would you open a cooking school in Paris? I would have looked at you like you had four heads. So where did that come from? And I'm always so happy to share this story because I feel like we put such pressure on ourselves to have this passion and this perfect career and find what we're looking for. La Cuisine found me. La Cuisine found me. And I credit Elizabeth Gilbert for the understanding. And now my belief that ideas have energy and they come to you. And if you don't give birth to it, it'll go to someone else. So La Cuisine as an idea came to me actually at a point where it was pretty low in my life. Family deaths, being away from home, losing somebody that was like my big sister, mm-hmm. losing my uncle. I was really in a crisis point, wondering, what am I doing here? When I allowed myself to just sit back and dream and have fun, this crazy idea popped into my head at New Year's Eve with friends. And then it harassed me.
I like that idea also. I mean, it kind of gives comfort to the idea, right? If you know that it won't leave you, it means maybe there's something to explore there.
Yeah. And also the idea that, you know, so many people feel unfulfilled because they've not found their passion or their this special thing, but it can still come to them. But they just have to be willing to see it and receive it.
So the other thing that people might not realize, especially people who have been to La Cuisine, the current location, is that you had a different spot for the school.
Which you've been in.
I still can't believe that, you know, you had this sort of first chapter to the business. For those who don't know, Jane and I actually originally started talking on Twitter.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Right. And I was working for a fashion startup, you know, a little boutique. And we went to some women's, like, what do we call them? Like a Christmas sale, or I don't know what time of year it was, but some sort of sale where I was representing the shop and we brought all these products and you were there representing your new business and trying to drum up attention, right?
This is when I had no materials and I made my sign with glitter.
Well, I don't know, whatever. You bootstrapped your way into success.
God, didn't I? Oh my God.
But we met there and I remember thinking, wait, you're the person behind this Twitter account? And that's how we met. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
And I think you, at that time, I was still using Lost in Cheeseland. So you're like, you're Cheeseland?
I know. Oh my God.
So we've really known each other a long time, but that school was on the left bank. It was a much different, had a different feel. Mm-hmm. You were in a courtyard. And I don't think, again, something I learned from reading this book was how complicated it was due to the neighbors. So is that a problem that happens a lot, you think, in Paris?
I think that there is always this internal struggle with the beauty of the city, which is commerce on the bottom a lot of times and residents on the top. They have conflicting interests by nature. Commerce wants traffic and business and noise and customers. Residents want quiet and calm. Mm-hmm. So I think there is always that natural conflict. In my case, it was, I hate to say anything is bad luck because it was a wonderful thing that I had to leave that facility in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not careful with the way you can operate your business in France, you will have lots of trouble. And that's what happened to La Cuisine number one. We didn't have the right lease.
Ah, okay. Okay. Yeah. Was that a scary turning point for you? I mean, it was so early in the business too.
Yeah.
I mean, things could have just folded up right then. But
absolutely.
How did you, I don't know, find it in yourself to say, we can't give up now, essentially?
Oh, goodness, that was very scary. You know, the life of a new business, just that first year, if you can get anyone besides your friends and family to come, you're already lucky. It was incredibly scary. And it was a point where I started to ask myself, do I belong here? It had become a part of my identity. When you start a business, that's an extension of yourself. And if that fails, that raises tough questions about how you feel about you personally failing. And I didn't have an answer of what else to do, to be honest, except for I just have to barrel forward. I've got to make this work. And then other little things popped out, like finding the new location, which was kind of unplanned.
But it was your ticket out, right?
It was your ticket out.
Or I should say your ticket to continue.
It was the ticket to continue, because had that not have happened, and, you know, spoiler, La Cuisine has a very salacious past. She was a nightclub.
Oh, the current one.
The current one. So just even imagining seeing this facility, knowing that it's much bigger, knowing that I have to close a facility that I've put a lot of money into. Kitchens are expensive to build.
Mm-hmm.
And then start again. You know, all of that just came out of the universe. And I thought, okay, well, this is the sign I need. I don't have the answers, but this is the sign. And off we go.
And you're, you know, behind Hôtel de Ville.
Yes.
You're facing the Seine.
Yes.
You have a very central location, which at times can be challenging, right?
Yes.
Because you're like in the thick of all
everything.
The things that can happen. But it makes it a lot easier for people to find you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And when it comes to, you know, I think a lot of people wonder and a lot of people dream about starting a business here. And they're like, well, all I have to do is get a bank loan.
Oh.
Well, you've seen, you know, we all know the stories of foreigners who have started up businesses and then they don't last. And not because the idea wasn't good, but maybe, you know, they didn't realize how much things were going to cost. Labor, that's a huge cost here. Do you think that business or banks, for example, are, between the time that you started your business and now, there may be a little bit more liberal or open when it comes to working with foreign entrepreneurs?
Oh, goodness. You know, that's a real tough question. I'd like to say yes, but a piece of me suspects no. And I think that the landscape has changed around, you know, particularly, well, let's just face it, Americans and, you know, our U.S. tax reporting requirements.
Oh, my God.
Banks don't necessarily want to bank Americans. It's a lot of extra reporting for them. So that, you know your customer is very important, KYC requirements. And when you come as an unknown, you know the French always have a dossier of history. When you come with nothing to show who you are and where you've worked and where your money sources have come from, it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard, which I understand. We need those controls. They're there for obvious reasons, but sometimes they hurt people that are trying to start
things. Yeah. I mean, I will say that I feel grateful that, you know, and you too arrived at a time when there was less, I don't want to say rigor, because that's not exactly what it was, but the rules in place for allowing Americans to open bank accounts here were not quite as strict. So I got in without a problem.
Absolutely.
People coming now have a lot more difficulty.
Very much.
And you can understand they get slapped with responsibility if the Americans, their American clients, don't report to the
Absolutely.
U.S., right? So before we get into some of the content of the book,
okay,
that I want to address, I do want to ask you, because you've been running your business through some very tough moments in Parisian history, right?
Yes.
You talk about many of them. You talk about Bataclan. You talk about, and it's not just Bataclan, it's the attacks in general of 2015. You talk about Gilets Jaunes, the Yellow Vest movement that blocked a lot of traffic and had protests every week for months. Transport strikes, Notre Dame on fire. I mean, and then we go right into COVID,
right,
which was kind of like the cherry on top, right?
And yes.
I have to say that you talk about the moment where your friend who was in China, right, who was telling you stories about, like, there's something going on, and you and I were hanging out. It was January 2020. We were at your house having a dinner party. And you started to exhibit some real concern.
Yes.
For what was going on. And I was like, surely this can't be. First of all, what did we know anyway? You know, it was just like, it's far away. But your level of anxiety, I think, really told me that maybe something was going to happen. I don't know. Obviously, couldn't have anticipated
right.
what
oh
did
my
happen.
Gosh, who would have known that?
But your concern was pretty telling. January, and then we know what happened, and you and I talked about what that meant for your business.
Right.
A lot has been said for how France has stepped in to help small businesses during that time.
Yes.
How helpful did you find it?
So I have to answer this question in two parts. France has been incredibly supportive to businesses, incredibly, like no other. And that is something that we should never take for granted, the luxury of that. And it's saved so many people. But the one thing about France is you have to be very clear on where you sit. And La Cuisine did not sit in the typical restaurant scheme, which is what was heavily supported. I had a slightly different experience, very grateful for the support in the country. I mean, my goodness, we all got to stay home, you know, or employees got to stay home and still have financial income, right? For quite a long time. For La Cuisine, again, we fell into this loophole because we weren't technically a restaurant, and therefore we could have had our operations on paper. Well, obviously that was not the case. So we did spend a good bit of time trying to battle for support. But, you know, support comes in so many forms. And when you look at the French community, they do pull together really well under tough times.
So you were able to reopen when, in 2022, 2021?
We officially reopened in June 2021.
And Americans could come back in then?
That was just when they opened the borders. So I could officially open.
Uh-huh.
But of course, then you open to who?
Right.
So we had about 14 months closed. You know, and my goodness, this is where you see, like, the human spirit is so resilient. Within that June, we had clients who literally had been waiting for the announcement on the border opening, and they were there that second week.
They were Americans?
Yeah, they were Americans. There were only like four of them.
Yes.
But they came. And, you know, when you have those little glimmers of, of support, then you know that the rest will follow.
Well, this leads me to sort of what it's like also working with the French, because
right.
you hire French chefs.
Yes.
And originally you taught the classes in French and then shifted to English. That
right.
must have been a big hurdle to
yes.
to cross. But that's been the focus of the business for many years now. What do you think you've learned from not just working with the French, but employing the French and, you know, and also working alongside of them in the day-to-day operations? And, you know, are there things that they've taught you also about being a leader? Because you do have to lead this,
yeah.
this operation.
Absolutely. So, you know, I will also say I have a different, not your average person, I think. And I say that with love because they're very, very open. They love to work with visitors and they love what they do and they speak English. You don't always get that in certain professions. And I have found that hard to find chefs coming out of, you know, those that may have started young in the industry and spent years and maybe didn't have a chance to speak English, or, you know, people who are wonderful practitioners don't always make wonderful teachers. People do what they do best and being there to support them when they need it, respecting what they bring and have them respecting what I bring. And they're two different skills, but they marry very well. So I've certainly, I think that they appreciate that about me. I'm hands-off unless I need to be hands-on.
Well, there's also this, you know, other business owners I've spoken to in other industries will say, you know, no matter how close you are and what your working relationship is, there's always this sort of suspicion
yes.
toward the employer.
Yes.
You're the big bad, you know, you could be the,
yes.
the tiniest family operation, but you'd still be in their minds the bad guy.
Exactly.
To some extent.
And I feel like that's a cultural thing that was a surprise for me, because in the US, I always felt like the hierarchy was very flat. Here, it is not. And even if you're friendly and even if you're on friendly terms, there does seem to be this natural suspicion about us them.
Yes.
Now, I hope that in time, the folks that have worked in my team, that's deteriorated and they feel really good and they understand who I am and that I operate with good intentions. But yeah, there is, and that's a cultural reference. It's really hard to explain unless you know people that are French and have worked in the system.
Well, and also there's this idea that they must be, you know, raking in all the money and,
absolutely.
You know, like
the chef. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, you see that in the restaurant business. Oh, the restaurant owner is the, you know, the
oh, sorry, I meant chef as in boss.
Oh, chef,
yes,
boss. Right.
Sorry,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not even just in the restaurant industry. Like, you're the director of some team in a big corporation and, you know, you couldn't possibly have everyone else's best interest at heart.
Right.
So there is, I think that's probably tough to navigate. I saw it in practice when I was working in a traditional company as well. And you know, and then do you adapt to some of these things or adopt some of those suspicions? I don't know. But what do you think for you has been the biggest difference in, or a difference you've observed in starting the business 15 years ago versus maybe what it would be like today?
Me or the environment or both?
Well, both. Yeah. What would you do differently if you were going to start a new business today? And also, what do you think, how has the landscape changed?
Oh, gosh. So, you know, I'm just such a different person than I was then.
Sure.
And when you start out in an industry where you know no one, and you know nothing, as I did, it's very hard to have confidence in yourself. And there's that fine line of wanting to ask for help and support versus looking competent. So trying to navigate that and actually to learn later in life that not knowing things is my sweet spot.
Oh, yeah?
That's my sweet spot, because then I get in and I study it with like childlike curiosity that we all used to do when we discover something new. And then I think that's when I shine best. So I would have told myself, it's okay. You don't have to have the answers. In fact, that makes you able to ask the silly questions that somebody else wouldn't because they feel like they should know better. So there's that. Now the environment. Oh, but you know, that so much has changed. We've dealt with so much as a society that it's really hard for me to imagine what it would be like to start a business today. There are things that are so much easier. Communicating with clients is so much easier.
Sure, that's true.
I mean, we have these tools out there. We have Instagram, we have podcasts, we have all sorts of things that we didn't have before. We had Twitter, where we just kind of sat on a screen and wondered who was behind
the
scenes.
Well, and also, I don't think your clients were necessarily
using it.
It was for businesses and individuals to chat.
Yeah. But those tools also, I think they've transformed our clients. Our clients now, luckily, I have clients that are loyal, that have been with us for years. But now I think as consumers, we have so much noise. We're like this, I think it's Thomas Friedman used this term, an electronic herd, where we just run from one thing. And when that's not cool, we go to the next. And our attention span and loyalty seems to have changed. So I think that makes it very hard to start from zero today and build traction.
That's very true. I hadn't thought of it that way, this idea of loyalty, because of the fad nature of promotional tools.
Yeah, we don't, people, their attention span is so limited.
How do you think people are finding you most, though? Not the recurring clients, but the ones who are still discovering you.
Word of mouth. Our clients are our biggest ambassadors, our best ambassadors. We don't do advertising. We are, of course, on social media channels as much as I can be.
Right.
Trying to manage that. But it's, to me, that's much more powerful when we have a client go back and tell their friends and family, I went to La Cuisine, you should go when you go to Paris. That is everything to me. And we get a lot of that. And I'm very grateful for that.
And all of that comes through, obviously, in the book. And you talk about some very funny, there are some very endearing moments that you describe from over the years, comical scenarios, the relationship or dynamic between the chef and some of the clients. Is there anything that didn't make the book that stands out to you?
Oh my God, Lindsay, this is a weekly basis. And I think I've now become numb to some of the wonderful craziness that happens in any business, but particularly mine. I realize that everything is so loaded because we are not selling cooking classes, we're selling memories. People are here on this really special Paris trip. And so everything becomes so much more sensitive, and just them getting lost and calling to try to find the school and screaming that they're on Rue Ravioli. I know they're on Rue de Rivoli.
Right.
But it's that you can hear the angst, or fighting their way into Hotel de Ville past security guards. Because that's our address, K Hotel de Ville.
Oh, my God.
They've literally shaking their confirmation paper in front of the security guard saying, I'm here for a cooking class.
Oh,
I've got to get in. So many fun but sweet things happen. And just the really extreme, Paris has become a city to me. And I don't.
What was it before?
I probably looked at it with more doe eyes.
After all this time, really?
Well, you know what? When I'm walking down the street and I take a moment to be present and look around me, I remind myself that this is beautiful.
Mm.
And then I can walk. It's a very walkable city.
Yeah, you're always walking.
Always walking.
And doing voice notes.
Yes, I love voice notes. But even when I am living Paris just as a city, which she is, I'm faced every day with a reminder that for some people, this is just such a special moment. And
right.
It's such an honor to be a part of that.
And you talk about also some of the differences in, why a cooking class here would be very different from a cooking class in the U.S. And part of that has to do with some of the cultural specificities of this location and this culture. So I'm just going to read one little bit from like the first, 60 pages of the book. And you write, it's easy to get stuck in the minutiae of cheese etiquette, but its very existence points to something altogether bigger. The French don't consume cheese, they respect it, and they savor it just as they savor life. The cheeses in France are as diverse as the many regions they represent. While American yoga gurus peddle the importance of breathing and living in the present, the French breathe the importance of pleasures, large and small. And I thought that was such a sharp distillation of local culture. Is that one of the biggest things you think you've taken away from all the years living here and in running the school?
I think so. I love this irreverence that French have for artisans. And food is an artisanal trade. So they treat it with reverence. And I love and respect that. And I think it's so beautiful. It makes you think very differently when you're consuming something. And it makes you think very differently about the people behind it who spend their lives trade to create this beautiful little fromage de chèvre for you. And that's really special. On the other hand, it reminds me that food is nothing but a vehicle. It's nothing but a vehicle. It's a vehicle for somebody's childhood memories.
Mm.
You know, it's a vehicle for us to sit and connect. It's a vehicle for us to share and talk about our cultures or our love of one, which is the one, you know, the people that come to France.
And do you get the sense that people leave La Cuisine understanding this a bit better? Do you think they can take it home? It reminds me of Adria Key's book, Joie, you know, trying to take home this, I don't know, you could call it better living, but, you know, it's more than this yoga guru, as you talk
right.
about peddling, you know, live in the moment. You have to really internalize it. And
yeah.
The French just are born. They may be born into a family with this, like, you know, stew recipe for generations. And then, you know, they hold on to that memory and it's how they, the lens through which they see the rest of their lives. I don't know.
Right.
Do you think people take that home with them?
I think they do because there's a fascination about how French live and their joie de vivre and how they eat and when they eat and what is the coursing. But if I may, I think one thing that I've really been reflecting on a lot, especially when you turn on the news and you see that we're in such turmoil mm-hmm. around the world, the beauty that we have of food, when I say it's a vehicle to connect, is I think more so if we have people in that class or around that table with cultures and countries and colors and religions very different than them, enjoying the same exercise together. I love the thoughts that this person who was once them is now us because we're creating something together and we both love it. And what a wonderful feeling that one person can leave and say, oh, I met this person from another country, and it connects them.
That's
the power of food.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I like this idea also that you're offering quite a memory, which comes with a lot of pressure for sure to deliver.
just a little.
But, you know, I also think that we, because we live here, we may think that, you know, it's going to take a whole lot to impress people. But we're sort of, this is our landscape, our everyday lives. And for a lot of people, you know, getting a market tour is a revelation in itself. So,
yeah.
I think you're, but you're right. I think this idea of consuming experiences and creating memories is a lot better than just taking photos of of monuments and that's something you're offering them.
Yeah, and the interaction with others around them,
mm-hmm.
which I think is so beautiful.
So why did you decide to write this? Because, you know, you've often been sort of the discreet voice behind La Cuisine, and, you know, obviously people who go take a class will potentially meet you, but you're not, you know, broadcasting to the world that you're the co-founder of this of this business. So why now?
Oh, so there's a few little ways to answer this question. You know, I'm very discreet and I'm a rather private person. And even in the beginning of La Cuisine, I never wanted it to be Jane's Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted it to be Mary from Ohio and Elizabeth from Greece and Tom from Australia's Kitchen when they're there.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not want to be very present. And then over the years, I've adopted that more and more. But why did I write the book? I started toying with the idea before COVID that I wanted to write a book about business in France. And I think you were one of the many people that said, okay, two people will buy that book.
I did not say that. No.
One of which will be your mother.
No, I did not say that. I feel like this is a fabrication. I call BS. No, I think what I might have said was, what is the takeaway for the average reader, right?
Yes.
It has to be bigger than business lessons. It has to be life lessons,
yes,
right?
So that's what I tried to do. And so I wrote La Cuisine again at another really dark, I wrote La Cuisine. I wrote The French Ingredient mostly again at another really dark point, which was COVID.
Yeah.
So again, another message that even in a crisis, you can come out of it and perhaps there'll be something more beautiful on the other side. But I started to write it, one, to remind myself, keep myself sane, but then to remind myself that, you know what, we can do anything. Anyone can do anything. I have no superhuman power. If a gal from Chicago who knows nothing about running a cooking school can do it, anyone can do anything. And it doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be small. It's just understanding the courage that we all have, the capability to believe in ourselves even when we don't. And that's the story that I wanted to share.
And you also talk about your childhood, which was not necessarily like there was no silver spoon or, you know, whatever
no,
we like
we
to say.
No, we were just a nice little comfortable family. And I guess I'm always thinking, where did La Cuisine come from? Okay, Elizabeth Gilbert, thanks for the idea. But I guess one day, if you quit fighting yourself, you'll go to where you belong.
Hmm.
And that's where I've ended up, in the kitchen.
So would Grandma be proud?
I think she'd be shocked.
Yeah?
I think she'd be, yeah, I think
she'd
be proud.
Because she raised you as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. My grandmother was a very big, very big figure in my life. And everything in her kitchen, everything took place in our kitchen. That was like the brain center and the heart center.
So there is a link in your past.
Yeah. Ultimately.
And how do you feel now that you've written your first book? Because I know you love to say you're not a writer by trade, but you're a very good storyteller.
Well, I had fun with it. I had fun with it because there's so many little things I wanted to share. And I talked about, I tried to make it enjoyable. I tried to let people read it and see hope and fear and insecurity and courage. All the things we all have. Talk about some of the pain, but how to overcome those. And I just wanted to share my little piece of Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what makes Paris so beautiful. She means something different to each and every one of us.
Mm. So what is next? Because you're going to be going on book tour in the U.S.
Yes.
You're going to do some stuff here, I'm assuming.
Yes.
You're going to be in conversation with Dori Greenspan, no, in New York City?
Yes, at Rizzoli Books.
That's what date is that?
That is April 18th.
So exciting. And Dori is obviously the absolute loveliest.
She's
the perfect person to talk to you about this.
This is amazing.
So people can obviously find you if they happen to be in the U.S. Is there anything you can share about the future of La Cuisine?
Well, I end the book on something that we've been trying to do for many years, which is expanding. That could be happening imminently. But as we know, I also say that every time we've tried this, there's been a natural disaster of some sort. So buckle in. But I'm really, really excited to go out and talk to people. If I could now, I'm just fascinated with the idea of what if I just did that all year?
And talk to readers.
Wouldn't that be great to just go around and talk to people and share and understand what their experiences are? And
well, I have to say, I know, you know, I'm supposed to be talking not always to actual friends on this show, but I am like a proud sister.
Oh.
So I loved it. It's obviously a great read. It's a great entryway into understanding how, you know, the French-American difference, which is like forever compelling because it just doesn't ever end. There are always
totally
new things that disconnect us.
Yes.
But then you also find ways to come together. So I think it's, you know,
always
it's about learning from each other. You're a great storyteller. And for those who haven't, sign up for a class at La Cuisine Paris because it's such a wonderful experience and a great memory to take home from time in Paris. Jane Birch.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I don't want it to end.
You'll come back.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to the New Paris Podcast. If you enjoy the show, it would mean the world if you would rate and leave a review on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, à bientôt.